Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland.
Welcome to Rational in Portland. I'm your host, Kristen. Tiffany Penson is here in the studio, and she and I have been talking for a while about her coming on here, and I'm so excited to have her. We were talking off-air, Tiffany, about all your ideas for city council, and I'm just so glad that you're experienced and that you're running, and I can't wait to have everybody listen to this episode and hear all about you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Kristen, for having me. I think it's really important that we get all the voices out so people know.
I do too.
Who is out there running. Again, my name is Tiffany Penson. I'm running for City Council District 2. And one of the things that I envision for our city is where we have people and businesses thriving, supported by city policies and practices that provide opportunities for all of us. I was born, raised, and rooted in Northeast Portland. I actually live in the house that I grew up in. I love it in the Concordia area. I am really committed to community. I understand the importance of making sure that all voices are at the table, especially around issues that impact the different communities. I am very experienced at the city.
Yeah, please talk about your experience. So
I've worked at the city for over 20 years. Creating and passing policy, specifically policy around providing opportunities, business technical assistance, and access to city contracts for women, minority, veteran-owned, and emerging small businesses. That work is critical because the city of Portland is built on small business. So we have to make sure that we are supporting them and providing opportunities so they can continue to be a staple in all of the quadrants of the city. I also worked for former Mayor Adams on the education team, creating policy around education and how we engage youth. I still run the summer internship program for youth 16 through 24, exposing them to all the different career paths at the city. The city has every career path that you can think of.
Maybe. How do you end up legislating at the city? What is your job and what exactly are you doing?
So I started my career in the Bureau of Development Services. And then
BDS.
BDS, that's old permitting.
And for people who don't know, what does BDS do?
So BDS, that is permitting. Permitting services.
So and everybody's concerned about that.
Everyone is concerned about it. And just to be really honest, it's always had its issues.
Sure.
Right? And so now the great thing about it is now we're centralizing everything, because a lot of bureaus have a part in your permitting for businesses, residential, commercial, all the things.
I don't think people know that.
Yeah, they do. And so you go down to that 1900 Southwest 4th, you wait in line, but you see a lot of different bureaus. And so the good thing about it now is that they're going to really streamline and centralize those services, because a lot, you've got your plan review, you've got planners that touch it, everybody touches it. And the biggest thing is people feel like it takes too long to get permits and it's too costly. And when you have people, let's think about affordable housing and all the things that we need around that and implement. We have to have efficient, streamlined processes and people understanding the code in the same way. One thing that I've noticed just over the years too, you can go and see a plans examiner or a planner, and the interpretation of the code can be different. And so we need to get really consistent on how we're delivering services, and we need to be really efficient, because when people are doing big projects, time is money. There's a lot of hard lending money involved. There's all these things, and they need to have their permitting quickly. And one of the things that I think is a good idea, we have a FIR, Field Issuance Remodel Program. And so you get assigned one inspector, and they just walk you through.
When did that start?
That residential FIRR program started years ago.
That's
I'm
going
to say like maybe 2010 or 11. What we need to do is expand that to commercial. So then there's more of that one.
Desperately.
Yes. Yeah. They have that same person. So
would affordable housing count as commercial or is that still residential?
Well, over certain units, it's commercial.
Okay.
So, I mean, so it's just those types of changes that would help as well. But the biggest thing is this council will have the opportunity to expand on that policy that further centralizes the permitting process and the efficiency of it. And that is key. And it's key for small businesses. So it's vital. So I'm glad that they've started that process.
Are you doing, when you say you're involved in legislating and you have experience with that, is that via administrative rule?
So here is a couple things. Let me also
Please.
So let's just talk. I'm also elected to the Portland Community College Board. That's a legislative body. We're responsible for policy and budget, and then we hold the president accountable for operationalizing. So I know what it takes to build good policy, and I also understand you have to align budget with policy. So I'm in my second term. I was first elected in 2019, then again in 2023.
Oh, congratulations. That's
great. So I'm experienced in that space. And then at the city, like I came up with the idea, we need to make sure that we are helping small businesses. And so I came up with the idea, we need a supplier diversity officer before it was even a thing. And so I came up with that.
What is that for people who don't? I don't know what that is.
Somebody that goes out and they interact with women, minorities, small businesses, and veteran-owned businesses, and they basically say, "How can we help you?" And then you figure out what they need, and you provide business technical assistance, and then you provide access to city contracts.
How do people get in touch with these individuals? So, I mean, as a woman who owns a small business, I didn't even know this existed. I wonder if other people do.
Yeah. So I started that and I have since, it's in procurement services now, and I've since moved on for procurement. I worked in procurement services for 11 years and I've since moved on. And so now it's called inclusive business contracting, and there's an inclusive business manager. Her name is Teresa Green.
Thank you.
And you can contact her, and that is housed in procurement services. But her name is Teresa Green, and she is the inclusive business manager. And procurement is very intentional around ensuring that all of our small businesses have opportunities. There's a lot of policy there. I've created policy, social equity contracting policy over the years. And so they have just built upon it. So
I'll link to that. Thank you.
You should. And so people know. Other things.
But see, that's why I like you. You know everything about the city. You know all these inner workings about the city that so many people don't know.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I don't know everything, but I know a lot. But the one thing about me, I'm real relational. So I've built relationships. If I don't know it, I can point you directly to a person that does. Because
so important for your constituents.
Yes. And it, collaborating. Like I collaborate now with problem solvers. Problem solvers
is talk to us about that. Because I didn't know about that till we were talking offline.
Yes. And you probably could have really needed
that. I could use that.
Yes. Yeah. But problem solvers is what it is. It is a team that is set up in each of the business districts. And it is set up to address the acute needs of those neighborhoods. So for example, like downtown, there's the business community and then the neighbors around it. You jump on a 30-minute Zoom call. You get on there, you state what your issue is. And so some of the issues are graffiti and camping.
Trash,
and
it says. I'll link to this too.
And human waste, even human waste.
Well, there's a lot of that.
A lot. We clean up a lot of that. You jump on and this team takes your complaints and they work it through the appropriate bureaus and solve the issue. So it is not, oh, call this number, call that number. No. You tell us what you need and they solve the issue. And so it's policy like that that needs to be expanded, because what I am seeing, this is a very generous city. And what I mean by right. that, everybody votes every tax in,
yep.
everything. They're very generous.
Right.
Where the frustration lies now is they can't see where their money's going.
That's true.
We're not delivering on our basic services like we used to do. This was the cleanest city ever. I've traveled a lot of places. This was the cleanest
city. It was so clean. Oh, it was so beautiful.
So clean and so beautiful.
When did you start to see that change, Tiffany?
I'm going to go. When Occupy
right.
started,
I had forgotten about that. That's right. I've heard that from other people too.
I started, and then downtown where the City Hall and the Portland building are, that park block
yeah.
was a mess.
For what, months, if I remember
correctly. Yeah.
Months and months.
And I just, then.
And then they had to fence it off.
Yes.
So that nobody could get in there while they were cleaning it up and digging it up. And they had to, redo all the soil and restore the whole thing.
Yes. And I just felt that was the time. And then
all the tents. That's when all the tents started.
And then it was, you could basically live on the street right. or sleep over.
Charlie Hales.
Yeah.
Safe Sleep is what he called
it. And that, to me, I'm really empathetic for our folks that are vulnerable and out there.
Yeah.
But to me, it's inhumane to have people living on the street in one of the richest countries. It just does not make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense. It seems like we have so much money floating around. Why do we have people on sidewalks?
Yeah. And like,
between county and city, it's hard to wrap your mind around what's going on around here.
Why? Like, why? And, you know, there's a lot of issues, right? There's mental health, there's drug addiction.
Yes, and we're last in all of it.
Right?
We're last in mental health and drug addiction. And we can't get access to services. We've got the worst addiction, the worst mental health, and no access. And some of the highest taxes in the country. Almost the same tax rate as New Yorkers paying $25 million or more. $25 million.
Yeah. And it's just
making $25 million
yeah,
more.
It's yeah. just not real. And so, yes, do we need the infrastructure set up to serve people? You need, we need, first of all, we need a sobering center in every quadrant of this city. Let's really talk about
that? Can you do that via the city and just forget about the county? I mean, do we really have to sit around and wait for the county to put that together?
Well, the thing is, the county,
I know they're in charge of it.
They take care of the people. The city takes care of the infrastructure.
Well, they're supposed to take care of the people.
Exactly.
They're supposed to.
But what I feel is, I grew up in the city where the county and the city collaborated and they talked. And there was a breakdown in communication, and we are feeling the
yes.
impacts of that. And it really bothers.
When was the last time we talked? When was the last time we were on the same page as Multnomah County?
Well, they're starting to talk more now.
Are they? I mean, I see a lot of negotiation and a lot of threats, and I hope the city makes good on those threats.
Well, and here's when I think about, I don't like to do a lot of passing of the buck.
No.
But what bothers me is on this whole campaign trail, there's always a question of why the city and the county don't talk.
Yes.
As constituents, that should never have been a worry.
Right.
It is our role. It is our role to collaborate and communicate effectively to make sure that we are serving the public.
But how do we do that if they won't, if the majority will not collaborate with us, or if the chair will not collaborate? How do we do that? Because we've got 2 more years of this county chair.
So I am optimistic.
Really?
I am optimistic, and it is my hope. It is my hope.
It's all of our hopes.
I know, but I'm really optimistic. Because
Why?
I just feel like we can't continue to do this. The public is rearing their head about it.
But that's been true for years.
But they're tired.
Yes, that's been true for years.
Tired. And I feel like we're going to get somewhere with the conversation. I think Julia Brim Edwards is an asset over at the county.
Well, I certainly do too. But the problem is the majority doesn't listen to her. They're not doing what she wants to do. You know, there were those budget hearings. And there's nothing but, needles in that budget. There's no off-ramp for detox or rehab. And she specifically said, I would like to see some of that. Where is that? It's not in there.
And you know what?
$4 billion with a B.
It's a lot of money. We have
too much.
We have more money.
Yeah. Than we could spend
any place ever to address the issues.
Yes, we do.
Of houselessness. Addiction, mental health.
Same with our city budget. Yeah. I mean, you look at comparable cities, they're operating on a much smaller scale.
And you know what? This is the deal.
And they're clean.
Everybody likes to say there isn't enough money. I never operate from that. We have, at the city, we have $8.2 billion. There is enough money.
Yeah.
This is what people need to really understand. When you are thinking about who you are going to elect on city council, you have to elect people that have the political will to do what's right, even if it's difficult. That's what this is about. People that have the strong political will to do what's right. What is right is to ensure that we have good public safety. What is right to ensure that we are doing maintenance, maintaining our roads, doing the things that we are responsible for doing. That's what we need to be doing. We also, you need to be collaborative. We need to be able to build relationships, work with city, county, metro. That's a priority.
Oh my God. You metro, our third layer of government.
You guys should not be talking about or worried if we as a government entities responsible to take care of our city and our people are talking. We should be embarrassed.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, literally embarrassed.
I think most of us are. I mean, I think most of us are tired. Like you said, tired of making, frankly, international news for all the wrong things. I mean, we've got the WNBA. That was a bright spot. I hope we can get to something like baseball. I mean, those are fun, interesting things. Those are nice things. I just, great. I mean, I hope we're in the news for something good. I mean, I love that. I love that WNBA. Well, I'm just tired of reading about it. I love that WNBA stuff because it was just one positive thing.
I want to have every sport here.
I do too. I want Taylor Swift to come here. I want a stadium, Tiffany. I would like a stadium, you know?
I want every sport to come here. Really be able to...
I want a football team.
Yeah, reimagine this city in a real way. This is another thing that's interesting about this city. We're not some big town. We're the 26th largest city, and we need to start acting
Thank
like
you.
It.
Yes.
And we need to
yes.
start really... championing for what is our city going to look like 10, 20, 30 years down the line. We also need to be building good public-private partnerships. We cannot Yes. do it by ourselves.
How do we change? Is that a cultural thing? Why are we so anti-business? Can we change that? Why can't
yes,
we? Why
we
can't
can
we
change it? Because if you are thinking
we
about
have to.
Forward thinking, we have to change it.
Or we won't have, we're going to run out of money. I mean, we will. I know you we need, have too much, but we'll run out.
You need people to come and want to invest in us. People don't want to invest in us right now.
That's right.
You know why?
Well, yes, I do know why.
Look at it, right?
Yeah, I have eyes and ears. I do know why.
They want you to take care of your people. They want you to make sure your people that are vulnerable
right.
out there on the streets have the services and resources they need to get the help that they need. But also, they want you to hold your people accountable
yes.
that are causing harm to people out there.
That's right.
Everybody deserves to be safe, especially those out on the street.
What do we do, Tiffany? How do we do this?
You know what? It's in some circles, it's unpopular, but let me tell you, I grew up where there were rules to living amongst people. And I feel like the social contract has been broken to how we live amongst people. And so one of the things that...
Yeah, you used to take the bus. You were
9 years old.
9 years old. And I want every kid in Portland to be independent and to be able to... Look, I, in my personal opinion, I think... I know, again, speaking of unpopular... I think my job is to get, and you know my girls, you met my girls. I think my job is to get them independent enough so that they can live on their own when they're 18. Yep. They can do everything they need to do. They can navigate around a city. They can take public transit, any city that they're in at any particular time. And I want them, I want them to be able to do that. And I want to feel relatively confident. I mean, you know, nothing is completely without risk, but that's life.
Yeah.
And I want to feel 99 point whatever confident that when they get on a bus or a MAX train or whatever, they can peaceably go where they need to go. Just like you used to get to school.
Yeah.
When you were 9 years old.
9 years old.
Like at least an hour long bus ride.
All the way from the east side to the
from
west
Concordia
side.
To practically
Concordia
Beaverton.
To Gable,
practically
all
Beaverton.
By myself. Just safe. And the neat thing about that, and then I went to St. Mary's Cathedral, and then I went to Lincoln.
Which is
I
downtown.
All that,
both of those
I took
are downtown.
The bus all the time. And so
and you were able to navigate downtown as a high schooler.
Yeah, and I had the luxury of the
high biggest school woman.
Playground, the best playground was downtown Portland to me.
Hmm, yeah.
The center of downtown Portland.
It was fun.
I remember there was a place called the Metro. Do you remember the Metro? You may not.
I don't.
I may be dating myself. So the Metro was up on Broadway, and it was like this eatery, and they had gelato, and they had pizza, and it, when you walked in, they had the big square black and white checkered floors, and you literally felt like you were in Paris or Europe. And I remember I would change out of my uniform, because at St. Mary's Cathedral, you wore a uniform, and I'd go in there, because all I had to do was be on the 4 o'clock bus headed back home. I would go in there after school, even if it was just to get a gelato or sit and just watch, and it was vibrant and it was bustling. And so I have really fond memories of downtown and just the safety of downtown. And right now what bothers me, even the older folks, the retired folks that you used to see walking around and then going up to have lunch at Nordstrom's, you'd always go in there and see the older folks.
Yeah.
You don't even see that anymore.
No, oh, absolutely not.
I don't think they come out of their places anymore.
You know,
and it
nobody
makes me
will
sad.
Forget. At least I won't forget that poor man, that elderly man who was beaten to death, mm-hmm. Donald, who was, I mean, he died. You know, I'll never forget that.
I know.
Right downtown.
I know.
No, it's hard to forget that. And I know. I get it that it's an outlier. I know that. It sounds like fearmongering, but I'm now at the point where I know somebody who's been hurt bad downtown. Yeah. And I'm at the point where pretty much everybody I meet knows somebody who's been hurt downtown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some have been, I mean, I know somebody who's been hospitalized.
Yeah. And then you think about it, because I go into downtown and work, right?
Right.
But I used to stay in that office until like 8 and 9 at night.
I stayed at mine too.
I don't do
that
anymore.
You should have the freedom to work as long as you want to. I mean, yes, in any city, you need to use common sense, especially as a woman by yourself in the dark. But in general, you should feel, especially downtown, like you should feel relatively confident that there are people out and about. Yeah. And that with the, you know, except rare exception, if you've got a head about your shoulders and some common sense, you're going to navigate that just fine for as long
just
as you want to.
Fine. And then, you know, the one thing too, and because of the houselessness, because of the theft, because of all the list of things, you know, downtown is just not very vibrant. After dusk, there's not a lot of people down there. And we have an opportunity to address it and reimagine downtown, because we're going to have to do that. But one of the things, our public safety, we have to be well-resourced, well-trained to manage every quadrant of the city. And so like for North and Northeast Portland, we only have 97 officers for three shifts. That's about covering about 58 miles, I think, of territory with only 97 officers for three shifts. On Lombard, there was just another shootout. I mean, we got to be thinking about all of these things. And so,
you know what's weird to me, Tiffany? I hear all the time, moms especially, talk about school shootings.
Mm-hmm.
I know one happened in Eugene, but we haven't, as far as I remember, we haven't had any in Portland. You're far, I'm sorry. The fact is, you're far more likely to be in the, just it would probably be like a stray bullet or something, but there's so many shootings in Portland. Many. There's too many. And I know they're down. I'm going to hear a chorus of they're down. They're down from what? Yeah, post 2020? Good. Okay, fine. They're down from post 2020. But that was the highest we've ever been, ever. Broke records. Willamette Week did a story, most dangerous place in America to be black. Because you could be killed by gunfire in Portland, the whitest city in America. Like what? I mean, more dangerous than peer cities.
Yeah.
The Baltimore, Chicago. I mean, it's wild. That was wild. Crazy.
And you know, in the 80s, there was a lot of gang and gun violence in the 80s. And then you had the gang and gun violence department created, and they were effective. And then there was this defund the police.
Right.
And then you defunded the very department that helped bring our city back after the 80s and address those issues.
Well, okay. So, and people can't see you. They'll Google you. They'll Google you and they'll know this. You're a black woman.
Yes.
The argument about that was that it was, I mean, the argument I heard from Joanne Hardesty, who was a commissioner at the time, who's a black woman, was it was racist because they were in the police. The argument was that the police were engaged in profiling, which was, led to racially disproportionate outcomes.
Yep.
And so that needed to be eliminated. And what is your, I'm really curious to hear your take on that.
There were issues with it, but there were also issues that had been addressed and people were working on further addressing them. So there were issues with it around racial profiling, but there were also efforts to address them and people working on those efforts. Here is what I always say around policing. I am experienced enough to know that two things can be true at the same time. Are there systemic and cultural issues that we need to address around policing? Absolutely.
Are you talking in Portland specifically? Yeah, just generally?
It's national. That's a national, but we have those issues right here. And we need to collaborate and all be at the table to address those.
What are the issues as you see them?
Well, because there is. And so what we need to be making sure is that our police are well-trained.
Do they need to be, do the Portland police need to be better trained?
I think there's room for that.
What would you do specifically?
I think looking at their training and ensuring that their training is not biased. There's some things around their trainings that may lead to bias, and everybody has their natural bias. Let's just talk about that.
I think they have. I mean, have you talked to Aaron Schmaltz, the head of the police unit, or any of them? Because I think they have. Don't they have bias training at DPSST and? How would you change it, or how do you think it needs to be fixed?
And see, I don't know enough exactly in the details around it, but I have talked to him. And the one thing that I like about Aaron, to be very transparent, he is willing to sit down at the table
with anybody,
with community, with any stakeholder and talk about, okay, what is it that we need to work on?
That's right.
And that is one thing that him and I have sat down and talked, and I said, look, I want to work together. to help address the issues around public safety. And I'm talking about just not just police, but public safety as a whole. That's 911, police, and fire. We have issues, big problem in each of them, right? And he is all about that. He meets with communities regularly. And I think that he is a person that is going to...
It's weird, bring, isn't it?
Collaborate.
Like, you wouldn't think the head of the police union. I don't know. Everything. I just remember...
He's a different style. Like, he's welcoming.
It's very disarming. Yeah.
And he wants to do what's right.
Yes.
He wants to make sure that the officers are trained. He wants...
It makes sense. It's better for them.
Yes. And he wants, like, community to come and sit with him and say, look, this is what we need. And so when we think about...
Even if it's just perception, even if we can build things in to help perception, I think he understands that that's important.
Yeah. But I think he's authentic too.
I do too.
I mean,
if he disagrees with me, I'll tell you.
Members of my community, of the Black community that work around policing and issues like that, they have given that type of feedback about him as well. Because the one thing I want to make sure of is that we are delivering responsive, accountable, well-trained policing and all of that. I want to make sure we're doing that. But I also, I want to be able, when the police get it right, great, you got it right. But when you get it wrong, I want to be able to have the conversation and I want to be able to, how do we plan to do better?
Do you think there's a gap there? Because it seems to be, there seems to be a relatively close eye, and I think police accountability is good. There seem to be multiple layers here in Portland.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we have a consent decree that I don't know will ever go away. That's going on in federal court. We've got the budget commission, the advisory people. Aside from the police accountability commission that got voted in 2020, we already had a police accountability commission. We've got FITCOG.
Yep.
Aaron can name all. I can't even name them all. But there's multiple levels of accountability, which I think is good.
Yeah, because we've got to have it. And I think, I don't know if there's ever going to be a perfect answer, right? But I think we can work together collaboratively and get, because what people want to feel is that there's accountability there.
Do people feel like there's not currently accountability within Portland police?
Well, I think what I hear a lot is that things happen, and then I think people feel like they don't get the discipline that they think that they should get.
Okay.
And so I think that gets a little tricky.
It does.
Because there are, you know, that's where you get into.
Aaron would say that's procedural.
Yeah. And so that's where you get in, you know, to human resources, and then you get into their contracts and you get into those things. And I think just the education of educating communities on that process.
I agree. I didn't understand that process.
It gets a little deep.
It does.
And I think we need to do some education around that process. Right. And then
that's really smart. Because, I think that would help everybody.
I think that helps. And then
bring people together.
It helps you think about, really, in a real way, what does accountability look like for communities? Like, you, if you know the process. Right. And so when you're in the room with all the stakeholders, then you can really try to clearly identify, what are we trying to solve for? You know what I mean? What does it look like?
Do you think that one thing that I've heard, actually, I think from Aaron, is that if we had an increased amount of officers, that could get, that the idea that people aren't being heard would probably get better because they'd have more time to spend, that we could have community policing, which we don't have anymore, of course, because they're running from crisis to crisis. I mean, we do have neighborhood response teams, but they're so tiny.
But they're,
and they're too spread out.
It's not like it used to be growing up.
No,
like
it's not.
Chief Moose lived in the neighborhood. You know, Larry Anderson lived in the neighborhood. Like, you knew your...
You knew them.
You knew them. And it really, it's really effective. Like, because it was more like if they saw you doing something you shouldn't be doing, or you got pulled over or whatever. Like, I remember Harry Jackson pulling me over one time.
Oh my gosh.
On Union Avenue. And I was just a new driver.
It's so funny that you knew who it was,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
And I was, it's like unheard of now.
Yeah. And I was a new driver. I think I was like 16 or whatever. And I can't remember. But just in the way that he talked to me, I think I didn't put a blinker on. I can't remember. So long ago. But it was just like in the way that he talked to me. It wasn't a ticket. It was a talking to. Like, hey, you need to put on your indicator. I forget how it was. And he knew my family. And so it really does make a difference. And then when you see them out of their uniforms, but just at the store or the park,
humanizes them.
It does. It humanizes it. I think one of the challenges now.
Do you think that's right? Do you think we need more officers?
Yes. I just said we have 97 officers to take care of North and Northeast Portland.
Yeah, that's, no, as far as I know, we're like 49th out of 50
officers, a little over 30 officers a shift. It's not enough. When people call officers, you don't always get an officer unless there's something critical, like you're bleeding. I mean, there's gunfire in every quadrant of the city. There's people being assaulted. We don't talk about that. Let's talk about the poor folks that are living outside. There's assault that goes on
all the time
within that.
I think we've all seen it. I mean, I've had them roll into my car while I'm at a red light, you know, just up against the car beating each other up. I mean, it's just like it's mayhem playing out in between all these and inside these tents.
Yeah, and we need
They're hurting
to,
each
everybody
other.
Deserves to be safe.
Right.
The folks out that are vulnerable out there, everybody deserves to be safe. So when we talk about
and homicides gun violence,
do we need
it's
more
the same
officers?
Thing.
You know, we're the 26th largest city. I think in 2005, we had 1,000 positions.
And we have so many more people.
And now we have so many more people. And we have 881 FTE. And I think a little over 800 are only filled. To me, that's not real.
How do we change, I don't know, the culture or whatever we need to do to get more police here? How do we make it attractive?
Well, I think one of the things, too, we have to be really intentional around who we recruit. Who we recruit and who
they
we hire.
They seem to be. I mean, it seems to be difficult to get through, which is good. I think it should be difficult, but it's,
I think, too.
Background checks and drug tests,
all
sorts of things.
All of the things, right? But who we recruit, making sure that we're recruiting the best and the brightest. I also think that
people there's
have
a balance,
watched us on the news literally unfold, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just unravel. And I'm not for sure that police are thrilled about coming here.
Oh, I think they're certainly not.
Yeah. And so I think one of the indicators.
Understandably.
Yeah. And I'm not in law enforcement, right? But I think one of the indicators, too, is how well we're running our city and maintaining our city.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at the news, we look like we're unhinged. And it's not
as
bad.
You don't even
have
to look at the news. You can just go downtown.
Yeah. But you know what? But I think, too, maybe because I'm in it, it's bad. But when you see it on the news or you're in another city traveling and they're showing Portland, it can be like, why would I want to be there? Right.
Yes.
And I love this city. It's my home. It's beautiful. It has all these great things to offer. But I kind of think of it right now like it's momentarily sick. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's like, it's sick. Right. And we need to heal it. And by healing it, We need to, the city and the county, they need to be collaborating. We need to better take care of our people. When I see people living on the streets, it just hurts my feelings because it's like you're not taking care of your people. We also need to ensure that children, everybody in between, and elderly people are safe. People should feel safe and also have their basic needs met. And I'm a firm believer of that.
How do we do that?
We have got to look at our budget. We have got to say, these are the basic services that we are responsible for delivering on: our public safety, our maintenance of our streets, our water, our sewer. And we need to make sure that we are delivering on those. I think there's plenty of money.
Yeah.
One of the things that I would do too, when we look at the budget, because the budget, I think we can do the budget differently. And I'll touch on that in a minute.
Please, yeah.
But I would look at all the programs or projects in the last 3 to 5 years that have been stood up with one-time funding. Because that's kind of where the fight becomes in. We all start grabbing at the one-time funding or the extra money or whatever. And if those programs are set up with one-time funding and they require maintenance, but there's no maintenance funding line item, I would look at those things first. Because, for instance, we have those bioswales, we have things like that, but then we don't have anybody who cleans them up on a regular.
For people who don't know, what is a bioswale? For people who don't know,
they're like an irrigation. You'll see them at the corners. They're kind of cool. They have like greenery in them, and they're kind of like an irrigation thing. And you'll see them. I'm doing my hands. Yeah. You guys can't see me, but they come out kind of wide, and there's like drainage and stuff in them. Well, they're a mess inside of them now. Like, there's no regular maintenance around them. And so, I mean, that's just, I'm not picking on that, but I'm thinking when we,
that's a problem.
When we do something that is going to require maintenance, but we set it up with one-time funding, and I'm not saying those were set up with one-time funding. I'm just thinking of the different things that may be set up with one-time funding with no maintenance, then that's ineffective in the long run, right? Because you need to have maintenance. So like, for instance, there is a thing around planting a tree canopy, right? And I think it's like $65 million being talked about to do this, but there's no line item of maintenance. And I don't know if you planted a new... I don't know if you planted a new tree lately, but they take a lot of care.
Oh, it's
they take care to get them.
Oh yeah, all of it.
To get them going. So I mean, I'm just
you really have to understand trees too, which I absolutely don't.
So I'm just thinking about looking at the budget and first looking at the one time money. What programs? What things have been set up with one time money?
That's a good question.
And are they set up where they're really
where they can be maintained?
And if they're not, then we take that money and we do something else with
something
it.
Basic, right?
Yeah.
Trees seem like a luxury when society isn't functioning. Like,
yeah. And I mean, I'm just throwing out different things. I'm not downing on anything.
No, of course not.
Thinking about.
Like, of course we need trees. And
yeah,
like, it's one of the best things about Portland,
especially
right?
To help us with
like,
climate change.
Sure. And shade and.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Especially.
It's just getting too hot in poor areas. Too much concrete.
Yes, too much concrete.
Yeah. No, we've made international news for that.
Yeah. It's getting too hot.
There's a disparity. So,
and just thinking about, you know, I think about things like that. Then I think about the way in which we do the budget. We're always budgeting. So you have a fall and a spring bump, right? And then you're like, that's where you kind of recalibrate your funding. Or if something didn't make it in the main budget, you try to slip it in there. Right. And so at PCC, what we do a biennium budget, And so that budget allows you to take care of the needs of the organization in delivering education, right? But it also allows you to plan too. And I feel like we are always budgeting and this impacts our ability to plan for the future. And so one of the things that we do at PCC is like, you have your budget and then you set aside contingency funding in case something happens.
Yeah.
And I just feel like we could do something different at the city around the budget. The budget process is so
confusing.
I would like to see our budget budgeting, if we could, go to biennium, like every 2 years. But we would have to build in some type of contingency funding. Plus, we get our funding from different sources, and how would that work? And I think we should look at that. Because the way we do it now, to me, is not as effective as it could be. And so I've just been thinking about it. Like, what would it look like if we were able to budget different? Because we need to be doing two things at one time. We need to be making sure that we are delivering on basic services, taking care of our city, but also planning for the next reiteration of the city. And I'm tired of hearing we don't have enough money. I don't believe that. What I believe is...
Well, you've seen it.
Yeah.
You know, inside. You know.
Yeah, people pick and choose what they want to do. And then also sometimes, you know, there's the shiny new project, right?
Yes.
Of course, and those always get, you know, more attention, but... We're here to run an effective city first. And I want our people to feel like they're getting their money's worth. I want our people to feel like when they call on us for a service that we're responsible for, that they're having a good experience. I had a team now called People and Culture. And that is really thinking about how do we recruit, hire, and retain people within the city? How do we train them? How are these bureaus delivering services? Because you have to take care of your internal people and your external people at the same time. And I think the city could do a better investment on their internal people, right? To ensure that the end user is getting the service and the information and the knowledge that they deserve. And so I get it. It's my internal customer is just as important as my external customer.
They have to be.
And when we talk about people serving people, we have to make sure that they are well-trained, they're developed. We have to make sure that they are having a positive employee experience because that translates out to the public. And so there's a lot of opportunity at the city of Portland. I know it seems dark, but I don't feel that way.
Well, good, because you're running.
I mean, just as an employee.
I don't think you can.
I have a good reputation, like at work. I mean, I can be tough, right? When I'm speaking on the needs of before our people, I will open my mouth and use it. And I will
come. Yeah, you don't strike me as shy.
And I will come with a solution, right? But I do. I feel optimistic.
What is your solution to building a bridge with the county? What is the solution there?
So the solution is we've got to sit in that room and we've got to talk to each other.
Well, they're doing. I mean, the city's doing it.
Yeah,
they just did it.
Today. And I think that we need to establish some clear policy and guidelines to how we work together because obviously it needs to be done. I grew up in a time where you knew they just talked to one another. Like for instance, Mayor Wheeler was then Chair Wheeler at the time, but he worked really well with Mayor Adams' office. And that's how we built policy and stuff around education opportunities and things like that. It was just almost a natural thing. Like I never
What do you think of merging them? Like Vadim Mazursky and Sam Adams have talked about merging things so that we don't have all these multiple levels with people in silos, so that we are working together. Like it's, when people think about Portland, I think, or even Multnomah County, I think they just assume that they're working hand in hand with Portland or that it's seamless, which it's not.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about merging, there would have to be some more research around merging. But this new form of government, the goal of this new form of government, too, is to operate as one city, because we have silos within
the city. Yes, we do.
And that can impact us of delivering services,
too. That's right. And so the not dealing with bureaus anymore should help with that, don't you think?
Yeah, so right now it's set up in the 7 service areas, and we'll see if that remains. But that's a step in a good direction to get us working as one. And like, for instance, I've worked in several bureaus, but I've always acted and created programs and policies that serve us all. I've never been like, I'm in this bureau, so I can't see something in another bureau for help. So like, for instance, somebody can come up to me and say, my water bill's high. I never was like, that's not us. You know what I do? Right. Give me your name and number. Let me hunt it down and let me hand you off to a person that has knowledge of what your problem is and is going to help you. And that's how we amazing. Should all be.
That's right.
We should be one-stop shopping.
Yes.
None of this stuff is ours. It's the constituents. It's the people. So we should be focused on how do we deliver the best customer service possibly. And internally, that's why we need to make sure that people are professionally developed, invested in, well-resourced, trained accordingly, and understand what their role is clearly and how it relates to how we show up outside. I'm a big believer in that. When you are a public servant, you are there to serve our customer. And so we just need to make sure that everybody is well-trained. Also, that there's good dissemination of information amongst us internally.
I mean, you know all these things that I'd never even heard of.
Yeah.
And so that would be great.
Yeah. And so I just want you to be optimistic about our city. And I want everybody out there to be optimistic. I mean, we're going through a tough time, but it will get better. But in order to get better, you have to have the right 12 people in there.
I agree.
And there are a lot of great people running.
There are, that makes me optimistic. Yeah, and Eli Arnold did who's in District 4 did a video recently about how, he's never seen so many people civically engaged.
Yeah.
And it just makes him feel really optimistic. And if that's right, I mean, I think that's right. But if that's true, and it's because I feel like I'm part of the chatter class, so I probably live in some bubble. But if that's true and people are interested and perked up, and sort of leaning in, then there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm all for that.
No.
Like we all need more civics. That's great.
Yeah.
And we should be paying attention to local government. Like you know this better than anybody, but I just think all politics is local. Like I know everybody's obsessed because it's a presidential year, but the way I look at things is like, what's going to impact the way my kids grow up? Probably state, city and county, mostly county, then city probably, and state is a third. But after that, I mean, it kind of gets fuzzy. Yeah. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I want people to be engaged on a local level and helping us.
We have to
make sure that we are creating a city that people want to live in, that people feel safe in, that people can see a future in.
And we want people to stay, and we want people to come back, and we want to raise generations who are happy about where they live.
Where
and who have parents
live.
Who are happy about where they live.
Like me, like.
Yes, exactly.
I'm happy
we want a 9-year-old
here.
Taking a bus to school.
Yeah. And I want to see
and
that.
And happy to do it.
And I want to see when youth go off and they may go to colleges in other cities,
come back.
That they come back and bring what they've learned and they set up shop here. And I believe that we can do that. It is just like we're just momentarily sick right now, but we're going to get healed. And like I said, it's going to be very dependent on who people put in office, right? And so with this great group of 12, you cannot have 12 new people that have no experience with government or creating policy and procedures within.
What do you say to the argument that, hey, we need all new people? I mean, this was like, I was sort of stunned by Willamette Week's endorsement of Keith Wilson, but in reading it, you know, their argument was, hey, we need an outsider. And so what do you say to people who might say to you, well, Tiffany, you know, you're at the city, like we need an outsider. We can't have somebody else inside the city because the city has all these issues. What do you say to that?
So what I say to that is I'm qualified, right? I'm qualified. I have written policy. I know what it looks like. I have moved as one since day one over 20 years ago when I walked in that door. I have always moved as one city. I may have been in bureaus, but I have always partnered and collaborated and said, hey, I'm hearing this from the community. What can I help you with? I'm a good collaborator. I'm a good relationship builder. And you know what? I am a product of this city. Like, I'm deeply rooted in community. And I'm just not showing up. Like, I've been here. I've been working with communities. I've been looking out for folks. I understand the importance of everyone having an opportunity. That's why I'm so committed, even in my role now. I'm still committed to small businesses. I still go out and, hey, do you have what you need? People still call me. I'm solid. I'm not perfect.
No,
but
I can tell.
Solid.
I've only met you a few times, but you're nothing if not personable. That's 100% true.
Oh, thank you.
And smart, obviously, and capable. I have no doubt that. And I don't know. I mean, I hope to God that you can build. I don't know who can build a bridge to the county chair.
We can do that.
You're definitely personable.
We can do that. First, it's always been the people first.
And that's clear. You're a servant. You're a public servant.
Yeah. And I think one of the most challenging things, if I can just be really transparent.
Please.
When I started this, because Dan Saltzman came down to have coffee with me and asked
who that
me.
Is, just in case
so
people
former
don't
commissioner Dan Saltzman. So Dan started his career at Portland Community College, elected to that board. And then I think he went to Multnomah.
The board that you're on now.
Yes. Multnomah County and then the city.
I think that's right.
And he came down and he said, I think that you should do this. And I was like, Dan, no, I don't have time. I've got the, you know, all of these things go through your head. But one of the things that he said about me, he said, you're pragmatic. He says, and I watched you over 20 years, like even give us your ideas to pass this policy, and it's time for you to pass your own. And so I said,
so good.
Let me think about that.
Ever the diplomat.
No, I'm like, okay. But then I took a couple months and I really thought about it. And one of the questions, because in talking to some other people, one of the questions they asked me, which was the final thing, was, how would you feel if you don't try? And I just, that made me make the decision because I wouldn't feel good about myself because I know I'm qualified. I know I care about the people. I have the experience, especially when you think about a legislative body and just being really focused. Like,
which is
PCC,
what the city council
we're
will
focused,
be.
Right? It's policy and budget. And then there's the holding the president accountable for operationalizing it. That's what this new city council is going to do, right? And so I think that it's just a critical time. And at a critical time, you got to have somebody who is pragmatic. You got to have somebody that understands that two things can be true at the same time, right? And you got to have somebody that is for the people first. Because when you're for the people first, you're going to make sure that their voices are heard. You're going to make sure that you're delivering what they want you to be delivering on. And I'm just committed to that as just a person. You know, I had a dad that had a barbershop where all community came and just gathered and hung out and all those things. So I understand the value of community and voices. And I'm just committed to everybody in the city. I want it to work. I want us to feel safe. I want us to have a good quality of life. I want us to just be moving around like we used to.
Yeah. Yeah, riding the bus at 9 years old. Yeah, I love that.
You know, just, and not worried if you're going to go to the park and the pool is closed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not even real.
We talked about that in your district, two pools closed.
Yeah, and two of them.
And it's hard to get to, it's hard for families to access any of these pools. It always was. I mean, I don't know about always, but in recent memory, it's been difficult to even really access these places. There just aren't enough of them. In my opinion, I don't think there's enough community centers. I don't think there's enough places for kids to play.
Public spaces.
Yeah, public spaces.
Public
that's right.
Spaces that are clean, that are
right.
The way it was. Like, I always went to Peninsula Park.
Right.
You could go there in the summer. That's what you just posted up in a park. Or if I was at my grandmother's, then, you know, I'd go over to Unthink or wherever. You just posted up and there were programs and things to do. So,
Tiffany, yeah. Where do people go if they want to learn more about you? I'll link to your website, but just so people know.
www.tiffanyforpdx.com. So that's TiffanyForPDX.com.
Tiffany Penson, running for City Council in District 2. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
It was so much fun. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.